Hey, welcome to the Texas Legislative Update. I'm David Blackman with Jason Modlin, the president of the Texas Energy Alliance, or the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, excuse me. Jason, how are you doing this week?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Just fine, man. I'm sure you've had an extremely busy week down in Austin.
It's a lot of caffeine and candy right now to get me through. Yeah. Been some late nights. House State Affairs has gone late several nights this week. And then last night, Thursday, May 11th, was the deadline for House bills to get off the House floor. And so they went until midnight. No shenanigans this year to go to El Paso time. And so they cut it off pretty quick there. Pretty slow day. Ultimately, there was quite a bit of delays coming from several of the House Democrats, really stretching out some of the debate. And so they didn't get as far as many people thought they were going to go, and that was probably by design for those wanting to delay some things on the calendar.
Well, this is episode 16 for us. 16. This is where this is the week ended May 12th, 17th week of the session. We have 3 weeks, 19 days left. Have you kissed your wife and children goodbye for the rest of the session yet, or you saving that for later?
I get to see him sometimes in the morning prior to school drop off. So yeah, that's, but hopefully. You know, the weekend's coming, so
yeah,
can reconnect. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned El Paso time a minute ago. Before we go over to Austin, we did have a significant vote last Saturday in El Paso on Proposition 7, a proposal that would have really saddled the city with a lot of unnecessary debt and really had a very negative impact on its energy situation there. Talk about that, what was at play and why it's an important, that was a really important vote, not just for El Paso, but really for Texas.
Well, that's absolutely right. So, and I had it as Proposition K, but you're probably
Proposition
right.
Proposition K, I'm sorry.
How far down on the ballot it
Good
was.
Good Lord.
The climate charter, and there was a number of kind of activist groups in West Texas, not even based in El Paso, that had targeted El Paso to try to get a change, an amendment to the city's charter to phase out oil and gas and really all fossil fuel interest from any type of interaction with city government. And so that would include the city utilities, but then any types of permitting or allowances through the city would need to incorporate this kind of phased in approach to eliminate fossil fuels by a date certain, which was starting in 2025, but then basically by the end of the decade. And overwhelming vote against, 82% of voters came out and opposed it. They did not get as many votes as they had signatures turned in to get it on the ballot. And so not only was that just, you know, fall apart in their ground game, but just really, I think community leaders, even news organizations out there really airing this is what is being contemplated with this. Did a good job getting in front of voters and explaining the risk and the challenges associated with this, and ultimately voters got out and rejected it. So I thought that was that was great, and it was really a testament to these are not Republican or Democrat issues. We're getting lumped in there sometimes, but really it's pocketbook issues for folks. It's jobs, and they need to take that into account, weigh that, because if your utility can't work with certain companies in town, if your power generation can't rely on certain fuel sources, it's going to make city government far more expensive. It's going to make business activity far more expensive. And ultimately, the lights are going to go out a lot more.
That's right.
And so not only homeowners, but then also companies are going to have to rely on their own systems. They can't then utilize the city for those services. And that doesn't help anybody because, you know, a family is then going to be hard pressed to try to find ways to back up their refrigerator and their house and, you know, any kind of computer or something that they would have that they would need to work on. So, you know, it's just good that those issues got aired. I think it resonated across the country. I don't think the activist groups are going away. They'll find other targets. They've already started in New Mexico with a petition there to amend the state constitution to phase out oil and gas drilling activity. So you know they've shifted targets, and right now it seems like it's a whack-a-mole on trying to
well they've gotten
stop these efforts.
These propositions passed, these activist groups in several cities. It's been disastrous already for the cities that have passed it. I talked with Genevieve Collins at Americans for Prosperity about this a couple of weeks ago on my regular podcast. And I know they got involved in this in El Paso and a lot of other folks on our side did. And I think that this win, you know, because it was not an easy thing. To get a vote like that, but it does mm-hmm. set up a model and an example of what can happen on this when folks on the right side of the issue get organized and push back and really educate voters on what it really means instead of just, you know, allowing the other side to have sway in all the messaging. And, you know, when you do that, you're probably going to lose. So really good, really nice, outcome there and kind of gratifying to see that in El Paso. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that the legislature also took note of that and not just a El Paso specific bill, but a statewide bill. So Senate Bill 1860 by Brian Hughes, Senator Brian Hughes, passed the House on third reading yesterday, and so that should be going to the governor's office here fairly soon. But it basically prohibits a municipality from adopting a climate policy that would be in conflict with existing state law or federal law. In some cases, this might be in line with federal goals, but not necessarily federal law. And so that passed and should be headed to the governor's office here fairly soon.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And there's no reason why the governor would want to veto that bill. But
no, no, not at all.
Not this governor anyway. So let's go to property taxes in the budget. You know, the two big items legislature really set out at the start, both the speaker and lieutenant governor, as emergency items. Of course, the budget has to get done. Neither one's done. I know there's negotiations happening. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, neither one is done. I'd say first on budget, I'm hearing that they've made really good progress on all of the articles that you might expect. So natural resources, general government, those types of things have largely been coming to a head, put a bow on it, and those are done. It's really the education component that is delaying things, and that's really what those two key items that we talked about: property taxes and then school choice. And so how Do they roll in those potential recommendations coming from the legislature on property taxes and school choice into the public education budget so that they are compressing that school tax rate or accounting for any revenues lost if there is an increase in the homestead exemption? Those are the types of things that they're trying to incorporate into the budget. Those aren't trivial. Both chambers allow for the legislative budget board to round off the small dollar amounts, if you will, prior to it going to Comptroller Hager for certification. That has to occur first before then the budget can be signed by the governor. And so, when you're talking about billions, it really does need to be a pretty concerted conversation amongst statewide leadership, but also the comptroller's office to make sure that there's no surprises. You will certainly remember several years ago, nearly 20 years ago now, when the budget got sent over to Comptroller Rylander and Carol Keaton did not certify the budget, much to the dismay of state leadership.
Yes. Governor Perry was not a happy camper.
So those types of things, far more coordination, certainly by the previous comptroller, Susan Combs, but then Glenn's really taken it up a notch beyond that, communicating far more with leadership and with the legislature on what they can expect from his office. And so that's been helpful for them to make sure they're aligned and landing the plane effectively. So, I think the budget's kind of hanging out on those two items is how big is the property tax relief versus the House and Senate two plans. And then what, if anything, does a school choice program look like? How much is that going to cost? Or is that something that's potentially punted to voters for later this fall?
Oh boy, fun, fun, fun. Last week we talked about on grid reform for the power grid, Senate Bill 2627 by Senator Shortner, along with SJR 93, would implement some incentives for the building of additional thermal capacity. It had passed the Senate pretty easily and was those bills were assigned to state affairs. Has there been any movement in the House State Affairs Committee?
So they had a pretty long hearing on Wednesday evening. It went until about 2 a.m. in the morning. Interesting conversation point, one among the members, they had some great kind of feedback, with the executive director of the Public Utility Commission, Thomas Gleason. They brought him up for about 45, 50 minutes and just had a pretty robust, dialogue with him about the capabilities of the agency and really what they're hearing, what's the feedback, utility commissioners are talking about on the needs. Interestingly enough, you also had the generators that got up and testified that they were neutral on the bill, but with a lot of reservations. And so Chairman Hunter was letting them have it. Nobody likes fence sitting, and that's probably the theme of state affairs for sure. Is give us a yes or give us a no.
They don't like mug womps, right? You got your mug on one side of the fence and your womp on the other.
I used to work from somebody from West Texas that talked about the barbed wire and how that can lead to the lead poisoning and stuff like that. So, But all that to say, he told them, you got to come back with your recommendations by Friday at 3 p.m. So, you know, as we're sitting here, that's
yeah, they're almost out of time. Yeah.
And he's hoping to have really their recommendations in place and really move a bill forward where they can get into conference with the Senate and hash out a plan for what's going to put steel in the ground. All of those generators were very enthusiastic about the PCM, the performance credit mechanism that the Public Utility Commission has already passed, but will basically not go into effect for several years, in the hopes that that lead time will generate enough signal to the market that they will start building or at least not shutter existing coal-fired and natural gas-fired power plants. So that's the goal of the PCM. But like I said, several years away, what is that effective signal in place to really build on? And 26-27 is about low-cost loans, zero-cost loans, essentially, from the state. And then a completion bonus.
Right.
And so you had a lot of dialogue about, well, do we really need the loans? Maybe just the completion bonus is the right thing to chase there. The loans are probably more effective from the generator side of things if they have guaranteed low-cost access
yeah,
to capital.
The way interest rates are going, yeah.
The way interest rates, but also some of the challenges that we've seen from lenders that as part of their ESG concerns are scaling back on their exposure to fossil fuel investment. So if there is a state component there, that probably meets the right mix to add in particularly small peaker plants. I think you've probably interviewed Watt Bridge. They've gotten a lot of press out of the Houston area, but they're a natural gas peaker plant type company. Several weeks ago, they said, we're done. We've invested $2 billion into the state of Texas, and we're not going to invest another dime. If we see the types of either PCM or Senate Bill 6 or Senate Bill 7 that get passed, they had a very different tune on 26-27. They said this absolutely looks like something that we could explore, go find more capital from the state, and then invest more in the state of Texas. So that seems to be the mix that legislators are looking for. And I think industrial customers ultimately, if it's lower cost, if it's designed to meet those kind of peak loads, keeping costs down, maybe that's something that they get on board with as well.
Well, good. Sounds positive. Hopefully something gets done. It's certainly needed, and whatever gets done isn't going to have to overcome even more strict federal regulations coming down from the EPA just this week. Designed to kill the coal industry and hamper the natural gas power generation industry. So whatever the legislature do, it's got to be effective enough to overcome those headwinds. Can't hurt to try, I guess.
That's right. Particularly new plants. I mean, that's right. What that rule is yeah. Entirely targeted at. And so, yeah, yeah. it's going to be a higher hurdle for sure.
It is. Another issue we've discussed here a couple times in past weeks is this replacement bill for Chapter 313. A version of it passed the House this week with an exclusion on renewable energy projects. And in talking with you before we started recording, that provision seems designed to help streamline the process in the Senate, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it is designed to speed that up a little bit. 4 years ago, when Chapter 313 was ultimately on this road to its demise, the Senate had really insisted upon not allowing for wind and solar projects to be included in the mix of 313 eligibility. The House was not supportive of that. They stripped that language, and that ultimately led to a lack of agreement with the Senate. Here, the exact reverse has happened. They have allowed for batteries to be eligible for these types of projects. Batteries, these kind of data farms, that type of thing, heavily computerized machinery and network. But but they also said they'd be agnostic on kind of what electrons, where they came from. So that was a slight nod to wind and solar for sure. Because potentially you can charge up those batteries overnight.
Sure.
Not with solar, but with wind. And so that might be a way for wind to get a customer out of this, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But they did pass a measure that did not allow for wind farms and solar farms to be eligible for this tax abatement. So as we've talked about before, they are still able to get a county tax abatement. So this is simply just a school tax abatement, school taxes being the largest on your bill.
Yeah.
And then they're able to get federal incentives as it relates to performance. And so they're able to tap into those. So we'll see. It moved pretty quick getting into the Senate. As we talked about on another bill, somehow sending it over to the other chamber resulted in a 2-week delay on deciding where it needed to go. That's not the case with this. It arrived in the Senate on May 8th and was in committee on May 9th. So so we'll see if the Senate takes it up next week. Again, it's part of this overall mix on property taxes on schools is what is ultimately going to be the ultimate package of property tax relief this session. The governor put a marker out there. I want to see half dedicated to property tax relief. So how did that in terms of the budget surplus? So how do they meet that goal, that marker from the governor?
Yeah. Well, speaking of wind and solar, another bill that we talked about last week is Senate Bill 624, which would actually create a process governing the retirement of wind and solar installations that currently doesn't exist in Texas law. So it's been a point of concern for me for a decade now that we don't have any statutory or regulatory governance over the retirement of these, I mean, huge industrial installations, some of them. So that's good. It cleared the Senate by a 21-9 vote. And I assume it's probably going to House State Affairs Committee as a referral.
It did get sent to House State Affairs. That was one of those ones where it took a little while to find its home, but it's in House State Affairs. Absolutely right. It would basically charge the Public Utility Commission with regulating wind and particularly wind, but I think there's a component for solar facilities as well. Yeah. And that's been a gray area for quite a while. There's really not in terms of siting, in terms of landmen negotiations. There's a separate bill happening to really bring wind landmen in line with other landmen that are regulated by the state. And so that's happening. But really to give the Public Utility Commission some oversight as to how these facilities are built and then ultimately how they're decommissioned. Doesn't exist here currently, despite, you know, 20 plus years of these
pretty farms amazing
being developed. There's obviously a balance. You know, we're a a small government state, if you will, limited government, but at the same time, making sure that there's some oversight over these issues. It's really been in conflict for almost a decade or more on military facilities. You know, Texas is blessed with the number of military facilities we have in the state, many of which are charged with training the next generation of airmen on how to fly, and even we train NATO allies and other folks around the world. Well, if they have whole swaths of the state where they can't fly north or they can't fly west, and have to confine their mission, that is taken into account when going into a BRAC process by the Pentagon. You know, the surrounding community is unfortunately not supportive of that military installation, and that's not true. But if simply you know, they can't do their job,
right? Then it diminishes its attractiveness.
That's right.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not for overregulation of renewable energy. I mean, it's an abundant resource here in the state of Texas and a big part of the economy. But every form of energy needs to be appropriately regulated. We're about to go into a phase with a lot of these wind farms now coming up for retirement, ending, you know, they're getting towards the end of their useful lives. And when you look at the equipment that exists within these, I mean, they really are industrial kinds of installations with tons and tons of steel, huge pieces of equipment. And as much as anything else is the concrete pads that the towers have to, you know, I mean, you can't just stick the tower in the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
You have That's to right. have this huge pad of concrete that, you know, unless you're just going to leave the land condemned for other purposes, is going to have to be somehow removed and disposed of. So there needs to be appropriate regulations, and we're a low regulation state, but you know, you can do that without doing severe damage to the industry, just as the Railroad Commission has done with oil and gas over the decades. So anyway, that's my preaching for the day. So let's, I guess, you know, this session, and I wonder how you feel about it. We talk about these issues where you really look at them. There's not been a lot of proposals specific to the oil and gas industry in this session. It's been very quiet. And I wonder, and this is a softball question for you to lob back at me, if that doesn't have to do with the fact that the oil and gas industry is such an enormous generator of revenues to the state government here in Texas.
Yeah, there's got to be something to that, right? I mean, the amount of contribution over the last 2 years has truly been remarkable. And you know, you go back less than a decade, and Texas oil and gas was the only thing that was keeping the state out of recession. And then ultimately, as it roared back, pulled the rest of the country out of recession. So, you know, pretty big wins over the last decade that this industry has provided, while getting smaller, while getting more efficient, and while breaking production records. I mean, it's just remarkable how it has rebuilt a lot of our coastline. In terms of investment in our ports, the ability to export LNG and oil around the world has really changed a lot of the makeup of the state, attracted manufacturing back to the state because of low cost with natural gas. And that message gets lost
a lot
over there. One, grateful for the money. Please go away, is some of the feeling over there. But then too, I struggling with kind of a lack of seeing down the road, just the challenges that we have in DC, the continued drumbeat that we're going to have some pretty big regulatory items coming down from the EPA this year in terms of the methane rule, which is going to have a pretty dramatic effect on the TCEQ and the Railroad Commission here in Texas, trying to figure out how to work with this federal regulation. And then the methane tax, which is potentially going to be a very big cost, not only to producers, but also to pipelines and refineries and large industrial customers. And so that, and utilities, of which,
and consumers,
you know, everybody is a consumer of all of those items. So, you know, that kind of across the board, this is what we see coming. We haven't, well, I'll just admit, haven't done enough of a good enough job of really imparting that on legislators, on elected officials, that we're gonna need some action to make sure that we can continue to be that golden goose for the state.
Yeah, totally agree with that. That's all I've got for this week. If anything else we need to add in before we bid everybody a nice weekend here?
I don't think so. It looks like state's going to get some rain. Hopefully not too much rain. Just the right amount. We're slowly starting to end the session with the likely possibility that there will be a few special sessions. It's just a question of when those are going to occur. Will it occur immediately? And maybe that's the case if the budget or a sunset bill is involved. But then if there are some of these bigger goals for school choice, then it's probably something that we see later in the year as they can start to build what's the main priority that they're trying to get done.
Yeah. Well, good deal, man. I hope you have a great weekend, or I hope you get a weekend of some sort and spend a little time with your family. And thanks to all of our viewers for joining us here today. We really appreciate it. We're getting wonderful reception. I get so many comments every week about this podcast that, you know, we don't do any editing. So all of my mistakes, you know, end up being included in. I appreciate people not making too much fun of me, but it's really gotten a great reception, and thank you, Jason.
Hopefully they're not making fun of me too.
Yeah. Well, you're good at you like that proposition case
here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank y'all for joining us, and for Jason Modlin, I'm David Blackman signing off for now. We'll see you next week.